There's a green hammock strung between stoplights a few blocks from here. The guy in it has a climate message for governments and companies. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Anu Anand. Good morning. That's coming. First, retail giant Amazon dominates most segments, home goods, groceries, things you didn't even know you needed. So it's not often we hear it's mulling a retreat, especially not from one of the world's biggest markets. The BBC's Victoria Craig has more.
Amazon is planning to downsize in China as it prepares to shutter by July 18th its online store that connects shoppers with local sellers. The decision comes as the e-commerce giant faces tough competition from domestic rivals like Alibaba and JD.com. After mid-July, Bloomberg reported that shoppers accessing Amazon's Chinese web portal will see a selection of goods from the company's global store. Though it'll shift away from retail in China, Amazon will continue to operate its cloud business there. A spokesperson for the company said it's working closely with sellers to ensure a smooth transition. As the U.S.-based retailer shifts focus away from the world's second-biggest economy, it's putting more emphasis and investment in other emerging markets. It's so far committed to spending $5.5 billion on e-commerce in India, where it competes with local rival Flipkart. To try and attract more customers there, Amazon last year launched a Hindi version of its mobile website and smartphone app. In London, I'm the BBC's Victoria Craig for Marketplace.
Let's do the numbers. Global shares are broadly lower. Weak manufacturing numbers in Europe's two biggest economies, Germany and France, are hitting the euro this morning. Meanwhile, shares of Unilever are up more than 2% in pre-market trading. That's after the Anglo-Dutch consumer products company reported stronger than expected quarterly earnings. And on Wall Street today, the popular picture-sharing platform Pinterest makes its debut on the New York Stock Exchange. Shares are expected to begin trading at $19, valuing the company at $10 billion. So as you get ready for work this morning, are you thinking about climate change? Yeah, probably not. Well, here in London, it's impossible not to think about it because the city's facing a fourth day of disruption by protesters who've shut down different areas. There have already been 400 arrests. Trains and buses are cancelled, affecting thousands of commuters. And that green hammock I mentioned strung across the stoplights at Oxford Circus? Well, I walked a few blocks from our studios to talk to James Fox, the guy in it.
I'm really sorry to interrupt. I just wanted to speak to you. You're strung in a hammock across Oxford Circus. Tell me who you are.
I'm a wildlife biologist, and I am tired of being a scribe of the apocalypse. My message is I want other scientists to get out on the streets because our government is not listening. Industries are not listening, and they are actively often denying the science, lobbying against it, because it makes them more money.
What is the point of being strung in a hammock across one of London's busiest streets?
If you are strung more than 2 meters above the ground, it becomes a bit of a health and safety nightmare for the police to remove you.
You all are starting to get a lot of attention from decision makers, policy makers, but isn't the problem that, you know, if and when the protest ends, everybody goes back to business as normal?
Well, the protest's not going to end until business as normal stops. That's sort of the point, right? This is a rebellion. The longer we cause disruption, the economic disruption increases exponentially. Currently, that's the only thing that our government will listen to.
James, thank you very much. I would talk to you some more, but my arm is killing me. You're too high off the ground, but thank you.
Thank you.
James Fox there, he told me he fell out of that hammock 6 feet yesterday. He is unhurt. Now, separately, Bank of England Governor Mark Carney and his French counterpart launched a new initiative Wednesday of 34 central banks to green the global financial system. So I called the BBC's environment analyst Roger Harabin to ask if we're reaching a tipping point on global climate action.
This is step by step for Mark Carney. He has warned before about the risks of climate change. His warnings are now getting more alarming. The message to other bankers that they won't be in existence unless they fully acknowledge the threat of climate change, do something to address it, and insulate their own economies from it. He's talking about serious financial shock. The line he is pushing is not that we've got to go all out now, like the protesters are saying, but that we have to have a staged transition to a low-carbon economy. And that there are two potential massive shocks. One is if we have a sort of climate collapse for not doing anything, but the other shock would be being forced to do too much in too short a time. So he is urging a smooth transition.
Now, the list of entities that are divesting from fossil fuels has also been growing. So we've got Norway's $1 trillion sovereign wealth fund to universities, churches, smaller organizations around the world. Is it possible to say whether all of that is sort of leading us to a tipping point on climate change action?
And I've been following this issue for more than 25 years, and I haven't seen a moment quite like this. But what's happening this time is that things are being institutionalised with bringing the banks in, for instance. So the Labour Party in the UK are hinting now that they might even change the mandate of the Bank of England to take climate change into account. They might change the mandate of the Office for Budget Responsibility to factor climate change risks into economic forecasts. And that's where what's happening with the banks, I think, kind of meshes in with what's happening on the streets of London. I can't find anybody who thinks that the demands of the Extinction Rebellion protesters are realistic. We can't find a way of cutting carbon emissions to virtually zero by 2025. What this group is doing is creating some political space. So we have other authorities in the UK about to report on how to force the UK into a zero carbon economy by 2050. They now have more space because there's other people staking out a far more ambitious goal for them.
But is this all enough to halt climate change?
You have these paradoxical trends. So while the Chinese have stated that they really want to clamp down their emissions, and having a centrally controlled economy, they have a great deal of power to do that and have been very impressive in their staging of renewables, solar power and wind power. It transpires that the central government does not have such firm control over what happens in the regions where they're still building coal-fired power stations. And the government is still wedded to the idea of creating economic growth through infrastructure spending. So many, many airports are being built in areas where I'm told there is no demand for airports in order to create jobs and keep the economy booming. Similar things are happening in India, where Premier Modi has set out incredibly ambitious targets for solar power, but is also installing coal. And in the US, President Trump is trying to clamp down on action against climate change. But in the meantime, the US is a hub of innovation on climate technologies, and many, many states are taking rigorous action. So you kind of have this push-pull effect all around the world, wherever you look, really.
The BBC's environment analyst Roger Harbin there. I'm going to tweet a picture of me and James this morning in that green hammock above Oxford Circus in London. You can follow me at BBC Anu Anand. And that's it from me in the Marketplace Morning Report, coming to you live from the BBC World Service.